Money Psychology. Money Psychology.
Every time you reach for your wallet, check your bank balance, or make a financial decision, you're not just dealing with money, you're reliving every money lesson, fear, and belief you absorbed before you were old enough to understand what any of it meant. I'm Elliot Graves, and this is Money Psychology, where we explore how your earliest financial experiences created the money mindset that controls your financial life today. Welcome to Money Psychology, Money Psychology. So, I want to start today with a question that I think every parent, every guardian, asks themselves at some point. What is the most important lesson we can possibly teach our children? It's a huge question. And for me, it's become less about teaching them a specific skill and more about equipping them with a certain kind of resilience, especially when it comes to money. That's what we're exploring today in our episode, Guardians of Growth, Nurturing Financial Resilience in Children. This one feels particularly close to home for me. I was taught the practical stuff, you know, how to save, how to budget. But no one ever talked about the feeling of money, the anxiety, the pressure, the stories we inherit without even realizing it, the money scripts. I'm right there with you. My family never spoke about money, period. It was this big, mysterious force that controlled everything. But it was completely off limits as a topic of conversation. As a parent now, I find myself wrestling with how to break that silence, how to write a completely different narrative for my own kids. And that's precisely what makes today's conversation so vital. We're about to meet a group of parents who are doing just that. They're not just teaching their kids about dollars and cents, they're consciously deconstructing their own financial histories to build something healthier for the next generation. We're going to hear how they're turning everyday moments into powerful lessons, fostering an entrepreneurial spirit, and navigating those tricky conversations that so many of us were taught to avoid. It's about understanding the long-term impact of these early lessons. This isn't just about raising kids who are good with money. It's about raising adults who are resilient, confident, and empowered in every aspect of their lives. And that's the thing, isn't it? That word, empowered, it goes so much deeper than just knowing how to balance a checkbook. We heard from so many parents that the real work, the foundational work, began with them looking in the mirror. Right. It's not about downloading a chore app and setting an allowance. It's about what? That's a perfect way to put it. Excavating. One of the fathers we spoke to, he talked about growing up in a home where every single purchase was framed by scarcity. Even buying a brand name cereal was, you know, a big, fraught discussion. Oh, I recognize that feeling. The sense that there's never quite enough, so you have to clutch everything tightly.
Exactly.
And he found himself, without even thinking, doing the same thing with his own son over a $5 toy. He said he could hear his own father's voice coming out of his mouth, and it stopped him in his tracks.
Wow. So that was his moment of awareness? In the middle of a toy aisle?
That was it. He realized he wasn't teaching his son the value of a dollar. He was teaching him the fear of never having one. He was passing down the anxiety, not the wisdom. And that's a critical distinction. The emotional inheritance versus the practical lesson. We often focus on the practical, but the emotional is, it's stickier, isn't it? It's the air they breathe. You can give a child a perfect budget spreadsheet, but if they see you sweating and panicked every time you pay a bill, what do you think they're actually learning? They're learning that money is a source of fear. That it's something to be dreaded. So how does a parent, like that father in the toy aisle, start to change the weather system in the home? How do you shift that atmosphere? Well, for him, it started with a really simple but profound change in language. Instead of saying, "We can't afford that," which is a statement of lack, a dead end, a closing of the door. Yes. He started saying, "That's not in our plan right now. Let's talk about how we could make a plan to get it." Oh, that's a world of difference. One is a wall, the other is a path. It shifts the entire focus,
from scarcity to possibility, from no to how. And what it does psychologically is it transforms the parent from a gatekeeper of resources into a collaborator in achieving goals. You're suddenly on the same team, looking at the problem together. Instead of being the person who says yes or no, you become the person who asks, okay, how? You're a coach, not a bank teller, a coach. That's it. And it demystifies money. It's no longer this arbitrary power that you, the parent, wield over them. It becomes a tool that you can all learn to use together. We heard from a mother who started doing this, and she said the most unexpected thing happened. Her son, who was about 8, started coming to her with his own plans. He'd say, okay, I want this video game. It costs $30. I get $5 a week. If I don't spend anything for 6 weeks, I can get it. Is that right? Wow. So he's not just asking for the thing anymore. He's presenting a business case. He's problem solving on his own. He's learning executive function. He's learning delayed gratification, planning, basic math, all because she changed a single sentence and invited him into the process. But I have to wonder, does that ever backfire? Does it risk turning the home into a place where everything is a transaction? Where every want has to be justified with a spreadsheet? That's a fair question, and it's something a few parents worried about. But what they found was actually the opposite. Because the conversation became open and collaborative, it built more connection, not less. It also gave them a framework to talk about values. How so? Well, another family we spoke to took this idea a step further. They created 3 jars for their kids' allowance, one for spending, one for saving toward a goal, and a 3rd jar for sharing. Ah, so it's not just about what you can get for yourself. Not at all. And they'd have conversations about the sharing jar. Who could we help with this money? Should we donate it to the local animal shelter? Should we buy some canned goods for the food bank? It connected money to community. So the plan isn't always about personal acquisition. The plan can be about generosity. It reframes money as a tool for impact, not just for consumption. Precisely. It teaches them that money has power, yes, but they are the ones who decide what kind of power it will be. That feels like a profoundly different lesson than just save 10% of everything you earn. It's teaching financial citizenship in a way. It's teaching them that their choices have a ripple effect beyond their own piggy bank. Financial citizenship. I love that, because it implies that our financial health isn't just this isolated private thing. It's about how we show up in the world. It's about our relationship not just with our own bank account, but with our community, with our future, with our values. And maybe that's the biggest insight for me, looking back at everything we've heard. It's that the most resilient children will likely come from parents who are willing to be, well, to be students themselves. It's less about having all the answers and more about being willing to ask the questions alongside your kids. That's a really important point, because I can almost hear a listener thinking, this is wonderful, but I'm still a mess with money. I'm still untangling my own anxieties. How can I possibly teach this if I haven't mastered it? Oh, I think that's the most relatable question of all. But maybe mastery isn't the goal. Maybe the goal is just honesty. What if the most powerful thing you can do is model the process of learning? To actually say to your child, you know, I'm trying to get better at this too. Let's figure out a savings plan together. Yes, the vulnerability in that is immense. You're showing them that it's okay not to be perfect. You're teaching them that learning is a lifelong thing. You're not the all-knowing source of wisdom. You're the lead collaborator in the family's growth. And you're teaching them how to repair. When you do slip up, when you have that moment of scarcity-driven panic, you can go back and say, hey, I was feeling stressed earlier. That's my own stuff. Let's talk about this a different way. That's resilience in action, isn't it? It is. It's giving them a legacy of curiosity instead of a legacy of fear. You're not handing them a fixed map to a world that will constantly change. A compass, One that's built from conversations, from shared goals, from generosity, from that simple shift of turning we can't into how could we. Exactly. It's a fundamental rewriting of the script, and what a gift that is. To give your child the freedom to write their own story with money, one that's defined by possibility, not by the anxieties of the past. The next time you make a financial decision that surprises you, whether it's an impulsive purchase or an overly cautious investment choice, ask yourself, whose voice am I hearing, and what childhood memory might be driving this choice? Understanding your money psychology doesn't guarantee better financial decisions, but it's the first step toward making choices based on your current reality rather than your childhood fears and dreams.